So this is an off the beaten path podcast. This whole thing started when I was looking on LinkedIn and I came across a company called Plant Medicine, and I was like, oh, this looks interesting. For those of you who may or may not know, my name is Barrington Miller. I'm the Director of Issuer Engagement at the Canadian Securities Exchange. And I wrote Plant Medicine and I said, hey, let's talk. I want to talk to you. I want to find out what's going on. And I had the lovely, lovely pleasure of meeting Adriana Kurtzer from Plant Medicine. It's a law firm. It's in the United States for our Canadian listeners. I believe it's upstate New York-ish.
New York City, California.
Oh, wait, and no, I thought, wait, when we spoke...
Yes, I'm in upstate.
You are in upstate.
You're correct. Okay. Absolutely. I've been hiding up here since the beginning
okay,
of the pandemic.
Great.
Yes.
And I also met your colleague who unfortunately can't join us today, but I'm sure we'll be speaking soon. So I wasn't sure what kind of plant medicine that they were actually dealing with. And because being with the Canadian Securities Exchange and knowing our story, we've had a very overt relationship, especially with a particular kind of plant called cannabis, as well as others, and dealing with plant proteins and food substitutes and things like that. So I got talking, and Adriana really just piqued my interest. So I, instead of being selfish, I wanted to share her and her company and their views and what they do with the world. So I'm going to talk a little bit less and you can talk a little bit more and tell us what it is you do, who you represent, and we're going to delve into this topic a little more.
Barrington, thank you so much for having me here today. It's really, really a pleasure to speak with the CSE team. My name is Adriana Kurtzer, and I am one of the partners at Plant Medicine Law Group, a psychedelics and cannabis law firm in the United States. Our team is able to practice in New York, California, Maryland, and DC, and hopefully Oregon soon. So thank you for having us here today.
No, it's my pleasure. So what drew you to this subject? What drew your company to represent other companies and people in the psilocybin, psychedelic, and cannabis space?
So our law firm launched on November 4th, 2020, which was an important day for drugs around the United States and this country. But it also, I think that launch date and that launch season really says something about psychedelics and cannabis in a bigger sense. So we have decided to, not only in our name, but in our practice, see this universe of medicinal plants in a continuum, and to perhaps in a revolutionary way, completely step aside from the Controlled Substances Act, and in our name beg the question, how can we see these substances as medicines? How can, in our name, remind people that they are plants? And then in our practice, very carefully navigate with our clients what is legal today, what might be legal in the future, and what business ideas, are not yet even contemplated in any policy conversations.
Typically, what are the types of clients that are coming to you that are seeking your advice? And when I say type, is it early stage, someone with an idea, established businesses or brands? Let us know.
So it's interesting. We really make life harder for ourselves by being in two very different industries. And we really think that they are very different industries, right? Cannabis and psychedelics. So in cannabis, you then have our split reality between California and New York. So in California, we represent legacy growers and humbled processors, joint venture craft growers, and so on and so forth. in New York, we're at the, you know, we're signing up clients that are interested in either switching their hemp licenses to cannabis or starting brand new companies. And in New York, we're particularly interested in social equity applicants and legacy businesses. We really have the stomach and the predilection and the appetite to work with individuals who have been a part of the underground, helping them navigate, the kind of coming above ground process. So that's one reality, one industry that's very different than from psychedelics. In psychedelics, our focus is within the United States, companies that we call ecosystem building companies. So they are companies that are doing things and building things that are necessary components for this much larger psychedelic ecosystem that we believe the world needs. So for example, companies that make mushroom substrates, companies that are learning platforms for practitioners, media companies, training companies, companies that list practitioners, and many other companies along those lines. And there are some biotech companies that have decided to use us as advisors in a part of a larger legal team. So they'll have their healthcare lawyers or their FDA lawyers or their, you know, pharmaceutical experts, but then they've decided that they also want plant medicine law group in the team for a much broader look at how their company fits into this ecosystem.
Wow, those are two different lines of practice.
Very.
If you've been listening to the show or any of the CSC programming available on CSC TV, which is on YouTube, as well as follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram, hit subscribe, like, and send suggestions. There's my plug. We have been emphasizing that cannabis is not the psychedelics industry. The cannabis industry was started out different. Its growth path and its projection is different. So if you invested in cannabis and you were successful, great, you know, or if you weren't, and then you see this opportunity now with psychedelics, thinking it's going to replicate and follow the same footprint and path, it's not.
I agree. I couldn't agree with you more.
And what I find curious, you seem to be speaking, and so does your company. It seems to be speaking and talking and praising the plant itself. And when people, in my travels, when people talk about the plant, there is this apprehension when you discuss big pharma and pharmaceuticals. And how have you managed to, come to grips and tie in the two, or are you waging a battle against big pharma, or do you see it as being a part of this growing sectors?
That's another really, really good and big question. And I think the way that I'll start by answering it is this. We, as a team of three lawyers and hopefully more, have within our team a huge diversity of relationships with these plants. Certain individuals are more attracted to certain plants than others. Certain individuals are more involved in the ceremonial context versus the therapeutic. Some have a predilection for the more medicalized process. So what's interesting is having a law firm in which, you know, if you close the door and you put the three of us to talk to each other, you will hear the range of opinions and predilections that might echo, you know, the space as a whole. So that's the first thing, is to say that we as a law firm don't have a monolithic position on issues such as intellectual property and medicalization and, you know, whether it should be just ceremonial or just medicalized. What we actually have in our practice is a diversity of opinions about that. I think that Hadas always puts it best when she talks about policy, is that in the future, the ideal future contains different options because there will be different individuals that will need different things and will feel comfortable with different things.
Interrupt you because this is what I do. People may not know who Hadass is.
Oh, Hadass Alterman is my co-founder, and she is a partner at Plant Medicine Law Group.
Awesome.
Thank you for that. I know, right? Everybody knows who she is.
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you? but recently at the Endwell conference, which is a conference about psychedelics and death, she was on a policy panel and that same question came up and she really emphasized that this ideal future contains these different tracks, for different individuals because of their needs and predilections. So the medicalized track, which is the one that biotech companies will focus on, is incredibly important for someone who has a diagnosis, for example, under the DSM-5. But what happens to betterment of well people? What happens to ceremonial use? What happens to just enhancement of certain experiences? So I don't think the ceremonial, I don't think, the recreational will go away when talking about any of these plants. So how do we make the ecosystem safe? How do we make sure that we have guidelines for the individuals that will be overseeing the use of these substances? And how do we make sure that harm reduction and education is a part of everything that is done?
Excellent, excellent response. And I remember when we had our initial phone call and the introductions, mm-hmm. and I met you and, of course, Hadass, we got into talking about policy and I saw the steam coming out of the ears and, the policy that is going on, in the United States in particular, seems to be a bit delayed, seems to be a bit slow, seems to be, it's not the same.
In terms of cannabis or psychedelics?
In terms of cannabis.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
When the last election happened, it was very, very hopeful for forward progress. And then after, it seemed to have slowed down and almost to a grinding halt. Where do you foresee the landscape in the next 3 to 5 years? Is this an election topic? Do we have to wait for a new regime to go in? Will this continue to plod along?
Yeah, so the policy question in relation to cannabis is one that is often on my mind. For a more practical reason, it greatly affects our business and it greatly affects what our clients and potential clients are doing. So your question is about, election, and I think it's a very valid one, right? What are we disappointed with Biden? Are we not disappointed with Biden? When are we going to have a federal legalization? The real policy hound is Hadass, but I'm always very vigilant of what these delays actually look like on the ground in the underground market and, for small businesses. So that's perhaps what I can address. What I'm seeing is, in New York, for example, the start and stop and start and stop of the cannabis conversation for years has been incredibly detrimental to small companies that were hoping to enter the market, branding agencies, PR agencies, processors, people that really just want to do the right thing and have been told, okay, it's now, okay, it's now, okay, it's not now, okay, it's 18 months. So I think that there has been a real cost to individuals who wanted to do the right thing and wait for regs to drop. Because the regs haven't dropped, we have noticed that a lot of legacy operators are just going on with business as usual. And that instead of waiting for regs to drop, people are just opening storefronts. That is not what New York wants, but that is what New York is getting.
I completely agree. And New York has to get it right.
And New York has to get it right. And we're in the weird situation where we see that clients don't even want to sign up law firms yet, because why? Why are you going to sign up a law? There's no clear path. There's no clear schedule. And they're able to keep operating or increase operations in the gray and black markets. So there's a real, that's where my eyes are on the real kind of granular level in New York. On the federal level, I don't expect legalization anytime soon. I would be surprised if it happens within the next 5 years. Over 5 years.
That's my over under. That's
your over under? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, to me, it's just not, you know, and what that actually means in practice, you know, we also, as a law firm, see, right? We are not allowed to bank with certain banks. We have to bank with community unions in New York and in California. So we have a lot of skin in the game. We're treated very similarly to our clients to great extent. So we see what this kind of ban on federal activity, also means.
Let's talk about your clients. As much as, you know, obviously observing the privacy protection laws and all of that. What are non-starters for you? A client A calls or walks into your office and says something. What is it that you won't even touch, that you're like, nope, we cannot represent you. No way, no how, because I'm sure you get all kinds.
So an absolute no.
Absolute no
is when a client is engaged or plans to be engaged in illegal activity for which there is no path for legalization. So we don't engage in, we don't aid and abet, we don't support illegal activities. We also do not, you know, offer legal services to individuals who are planning businesses for which we know there is no legal route. So that's kind of a big statement. Things get a lot more interesting when you speak, for example, about entheogenic churches. So sincere practitioners that use sacraments that are psychedelic in their religious practices. We do have on our team a lawyer, Allison Hoots, who specializes and just actually wrote the guide for entheogenic churches to navigate the gray area that does exist in American law at a federal and state level related to that. So, you know, when I say we don't represent individuals that engage in illegal activities, we believe that the sincere practice with entheogenic substances is not illegal under the law, and we help clients craft their strategies in that regard. However, you know, if you write me an email and you say, I want to open a psilocybin, retail facility or website, my answer is absolutely not. There's no future for that contemplated in any of the policy conversations. We're not going to do that. So does that help kind of navigate?
That's fascinating because I can honestly say you are the first person I've spoken to or interviewed who's used the word
sincere.
regarding the sacrament and the practice. We've spoken anecdotally about it, but it hasn't come up as far as a company or law firm representing that specific group. So thank you for pointing that out, that yes, there are instances, because psychedelics and psilocybin, it's not legal.
Right. Schedule one substances. And there are, so where things get interesting is, well, most of the companies that we work with that we say are in the psychedelic space are, let me try to describe them. They're doing something today. They're building a brand, they're building operations that can then be augmented with additional substances as and when they become legal. So for example, we work with a company that sells medicinal mushrooms. Those can be added to your microdose, or in the future, that company might choose to add psilocybin to their offerings if and when it becomes legal. So that's an example. Mushroom substrate company. If you're growing medicinal mushrooms or gourmet mushrooms, you need substrates. That is a company that obviously will have a whole new market to service once the production of psilocybin mushrooms launches and you need mushroom substrate. Educational platforms, right? So you can argue that, you know, education and harm reduction education for practitioners is important. What we know it's happening underground, but we also hope that it'll one day, you know, continue pushing above ground. And so those are just a couple of examples of companies that we consider in the psychedelic ecosystem that are, that have a legal business now. And those and their business strategies can adapt to include additional substances. One of the most kind of talked about business models that can be augmented with this legalization, you know, future that we're looking at is really the ketamine clinical network, right? So we do have a couple of clients that are navigating, you know, the establishment of ketamine clinics, but with the understanding that that is just one substance in what might be, you know, an offering of many in the future. And just to clarify, we do know that ketamine is a dissociative and not a psychedelic, but ketamine ends up falling or leading many of the conversations in the psychedelic space because it really is the only substance that can be currently prescribed off-label in a therapeutic clinical setting in the United States. So that's an example of a business model. We also assist clients that are US-based, but hosting retreats and building retreats in foreign destinations where substances are legal. And so that's, you know, that's a compliance, you know, that's an interesting compliance conversation. We work with local counsel in places like Jamaica to make sure that our clients are protected, but can fundraise in America, you know, in the United States to American audiences.
That's a really interesting one. I was having a conversation the other evening and we were talking about, of course, Jamaica and the number of retreats that are popping up and that are having discussions on going public, as well as Costa Rica. Costa Rica is another hotspot for retreats and things of that nature.
One of the things that's very important to us in our practice is the larger network of lawyers that we rely on to build this ecosystem. So it's really important for me to say that, you know, the psychedelic ecosystem will not develop with just one or two law firms. We need a diversity of perspectives and law firms. That is why the Psychedelic Bar Association is so important. What's also important are relationships.
What is the Psychedelic Bar Association?
I'm happy you asked. So the Psychedelic Bar Association is an association like any other bar association. Hadas is one of the founders, together with a fantastic team of lawyers, many of whom spoke at the recent Horizons Conference in New York. And their objective is really to pull together the lawyers active in the community, you know, provide educational materials, produce educational materials, and just organize us as a group of lawyers that provide services in this field.
Excellent. I believe that the strongest point in any industry, new, emerging, whatever, is education. That's where the foundation lies. And I think it's important that people know and understand that you don't have to be in the legal profession, that just understanding what's going on out there is important. I do want to shift the conversation a little bit. So towards your firm, and there may not be a lot of firms out there, but there will be more, I'm sure, as this business evolves. What would you say is your strongest, your firm's strongest feature, your the point that separates you from people that are either in it, have been in it, or that are coming into it?
That's a really good question.
I noticed, and I know I probably shouldn't bring it up. And it's just,
you can totally bring it up.
It just so happens that it's an all-female firm, I believe, which is
hopefully adding our first male lawyer.
Yeah, it's like, it's that, and that's why I don't want to bring it up. Like, it's
no, you can totally
I don't
bring
want it to be. It's not a thing.
It's
not a thing anymore. Like, when I say a thing, it's it shouldn't be a thing anymore, and it shouldn't be noticeable or any of that. And then,
I'll up that even further and say that, you know, when we originally launched, we were three immigrant women. So there's also a kind of an interesting, an interesting dimension to that. We can have a conversation about what is it about immigrants that, you know, find navigating taboo topics easier maybe than established communities.
Yeah.
But that's a conversation for another day. So your question is perhaps, you know, what makes our law firm different from some of the other law firms in the space? And I want to start by saying that other law firms in the space are treating this simply as a new opportunity. They see it as a sexy new vertical that they can add to their practice, a new market that they can cultivate clients in, and they're acting in a very strong pay to play, pay to cultivate manner. I wish them luck. There probably is space for that behavior in any industry. I think that the big difference is, you know, like I said earlier, each of the members of our team has a relationship with these plants that really informs why they're doing this work, why it's important, why they're attracted to this work. The other thing that I've noticed is different about our law firm, because we've had to say no to potential clients that didn't understand the extent to which this is true, is that we listen to what is happening in the psychedelic community. We listen to what existing practitioners above ground or underground are saying they don't like about some of the more opportunistic business models that have come about. And we listen and we fold that listening back into our advice to our clients, because the reality is a lot of time lawyers are not just advising on what is legal and what is illegal. We're often advising, which is why people come to us, on what is a good idea to do or what is not right. A good idea to do if you want to show reverence to, you know, X, Y, and Z. So, you know, that ability to listen to, you know, how are ketamine assisted therapy providers feeling about this, you know, exploding fruit salad of listing platforms that uses their labor and their name, you know, as commodity points, right, in building these platforms. So that's something that we're a bit different. And I think because I'm Brazilian, I think I was always raised to think that relationships are very important and that the world is small. So the idea is that our client is part of many, many, many other relationships. We are a part of many, many, many other relationships. And so, you know, there's a desire to act ethically and act consciously, knowing that you will be in this ecosystem for a long time and you will rub up against and encounter and interact with the people that you treat well or you treat poorly for a long time to come. And we really, really hold that as a North Star for the law firm.
Well, Adriana, I just want to say on behalf of the Canadian Securities Exchange, on behalf of myself, I'd like to thank you and thank Plant Medicine Law Group for taking the time to explain what it is you do, your insights. Because, like I said, you do straddle both, and those are both these are two sectors that have brought the CSE a lot of attention. We have a lot of companies in both of them, and so I think it's important for them to know that there are law firms like you and like yours who are out there to represent them, as well as for private companies who may be considering going public. You know, please consider the Canadian Securities Exchange, but if you don't, you know, speak with a lawyer. Like,
absolutely. And as a I was a capital markets lawyer at Simpson Thacher, doing only Brazilian IPOs at the beginning of my career, which means many things. It means I understand the capital markets. I have a great affinity for seeing new entrants. And I have a great love of deep due diligence. And so I really see a situation in which the companies that we're assisting today, Well, two things will happen. There will be M&A activity. So some of these companies will join forces, and there will be listing activity. And I think that there's nothing inconsistent between, you know, going public and building a strong legal company that sees itself as a part of a larger community.
And that is why we have a we have strong partnerships, of course, not only with Plant Medicine law firm, but, you know, with many, many other law firms, accounting firms, website designers, corporate compliance, all of those things. So if you like this content and you'd like to learn more, please visit www.thecse.com. You can drop me an email personally if you want, barrington.miller@thecse.com. And if they want to find where you are, Adriana, where would people go?
Absolutely. So our website is plantmedicinelaw.com. We are particularly active on LinkedIn. We have a passive presence on Instagram and Twitter. And absolutely feel free to email me at adriana@plantmedicinelaw.com. That's adriana@plantmedicinelaw.com.
And I can speak firsthand because I did reach out on LinkedIn, and here we are.
We answer. We love LinkedIn. It's an important platform.
Later. No, it was great. Thank you again so much for taking the time. We appreciate you. We appreciate your business. We appreciate your clients. And of course, taking the time, you could have listened to any podcast, but you chose to lend your ears here. And with that, we'll say goodnight, and we'll see you at the next episode.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.